Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting's talk show. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and we're going to have a whole variety of things today. And we're going to start out with a new friend of mine, Jonah Giamalve, who is with she has a website that and a store and has done all these amazing things. So, Jonah, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Pat. This is fun.
Yeah. You know what? I'm, you know, always curious how people get started and, you know, where they, because you've been in the industry a while and you've done a lot of different things. Did you actually sew when you were a kid?
I, like a lot of people my age, we took home ec. So I took home ec in junior high and I didn't really enjoy it, but I did learn how to sew. I did learn how to set my machine and what a seam allowance was and things like that. So when I got the bug to start sewing in high school, I at least knew how to run a machine. So at least home ec served me in that way.
That cracks me up. It's like you weren't too excited about it, but now you teach people to sew. And that's
it's so true. But I make it fun, unlike my teacher. I think that was the big thing. My teacher wasn't that much fun. And I try to make it fun. So hopefully we're having a good time here.
So tell me where your studio is, because we're going to talk a little bit about teaching.
Yeah, I live in Gilbert, Arizona, which is right outside of Phoenix. And my studio is actually in my home. We have one of those big loft rooms upstairs that has been a million different things. It was a homeschool room when my kids were younger. And then when I had my online fabric store, all my inventory was up here. And now that a couple of my kids have grown and moved out, I have a lot of space. And so this was a good time to kind of empty it out and fill it with tables and sewing machines and stuff for school. So it's here in my house, which is, it's nice because I can be in here all day. And it feels safe, like when I've got kids here. We're just in here having fun sewing. So that's what I'm doing for right now.
Now, how do people find out where you're located? Do you have a website that's got like a schedule?
I do. It's makesewing.com. And I have a Facebook group. And, so local people can find me and see what the schedule is and email me. And I like it when people email and say, hey, I'm interested in learning how to put a zipper in a skirt or things like that, because then it gives me ideas of what it is people are looking to learn. So, yeah, right now the teaching is local here in my home studio. Yeah.
So, Jonah, tell me, what is it like to have seen, you know, you were a very early adopter. We were talking about how you were selling finished goods on eBay, and that was before Etsy. And, you know, you've done all these things from fabric and patterns. You've written books. What do you feel about, like, how you've changed and gone through things? Do you just, like, when something's sort of slowing down, you just jumped on something new?
I think that's kind of what I've learned to do, is kind of try to, because when the economy tanked, it's been, 10 years now when all that, the housing and everything, that really shocked me. I thought I had it made. My store was doing fantastic and everything was great. And that was just kind of, you know, that everything went off the rails. And I think that's when I learned that I just have to pay attention to what's going on, not to necessarily what the chatter is like in the news or whatever, but what I actually see people buying and doing and sewing and things like that, and just trying to pay attention and pivot when necessary, when one thing's kind of pooping down and another thing's picking up. And so, yeah, just trying to stay on top of things. And right now I'm working on beginner sewing curriculum and things like that. And hopefully that'll be more of a passive incoming thing while I'm busy with other stuff. But yeah, I'm just trying to stay on top of things. It's hard. Everything changes so fast and there's always new technology. And
I know.
There's just a lot.
It is crazy. I would never have thought that, like, a sewing industry stuff, you had to be, like, on top of it all the time, just like any other business. It is sort of mind-boggling.
It is, because you're sitting there going, I want to sew. Why do I have to learn HTML coding when all I want to do is, you know, have a website and sew? But,
Well, let's talk a little bit about teaching, because you have been teaching children, and I am sort of would love to hear a few tips for that, because a lot of people have either family members or in some way want to teach children, and it's a little bit different than teaching adults. What are a few tips?
Kids are so much fun. I think the thing I've really, really learned is to just keep it as simple as possible. Sometimes I get these kids in here and I started learning right away. They're not even reading yet. So I've got their instructions there. I'm like, read the next line. And then they look at me, but I don't read. And then I feel terrible. It's at a normal age to not be reading. Mm-hmm. It just kind of means I have to be thinking more on their level. And so just learning to come at it at their level and just don't overwhelm them. They just want to go home with something. Mm-hmm. And I had a class where I was just getting started teaching, and I was having the kids do a reversible tote bag, which mm-hmm. for the adult classes, they whip them out in 2 hours, even the beginners. Mm-hmm. These poor kids, it took them 3 days. And I felt terrible. Oh. And then these girls just, they took some patches of scraps from me and started sewing them into little tiny pockets. And that made them so much happier than their tote bag. And that was just an eye-opener for me. They just want to sew something and have it finished to take home, even if it's just a little pocket or a mm-hmm. teeny-tiny drawstring bag or a bookmark. So just going easy so that I don't make them dislike it. I want them to have fun. So
that keeping it really simple. Yeah.
Really simple.
Yeah, even simpler than what you think beginning adults would need to do.
Exactly. And they don't care about technique. They don't care if their lines are straight. They just want to take something home to mom and dad. So I'm really learning, you know, to keep it on that level. And another thing is just to keep it fun, because they are kids. Mm-hmm. And I want them to enjoy. I want them to make friends with each other while they're here and mm-hmm. have fun. So I'll say, hey, I finally got to see Moana this week. And then we'll chat about Disney movies and, you know, they like to talk about stuff like that. So we just talk about, you know, kid things that are going on and fun movies and those little dolls that had last year, pop something or other, and, you know, mm-hmm. just whatever kids are into. I try to stay on top of things.
To stay on top of the 8-year-old scene or whatever it is.
Yeah, boy. And they're moving fast. So, uh-huh. And then another thing I'm finding they really like is when I take lots of pictures. And they get hammy, and then when I post them on my Facebook page, or I had a little booth at a local art walk thing this weekend, and some of my students showed up and they saw their picture on my poster, and they were so excited, and so they like to see pictures of themselves sewing, things like that. So
that's funny. Yeah, I wouldn't, you know, I don't have children, so you know, I wouldn't have thought of that aspect. But yeah, just they're not shy about having their pictures taken.
No, they're used to it, this generation. Mm-hmm. It's just, they're funny.
So what's a tip that you have or something that sort of surprises adults that you work with for sewing that you're like, hey, did you ever do this?
My favorite thing is the Elmer's glue sticks, the ones that are purple when they're mm-hmm. before they dry. And that just blows everybody away because no one thinks to use it that way. And it is, I love those things. When it's back to school time, I buy zillions of them and just keep them stocked up. And mm-hmm. then I can send them home with a glue stick. But people are just blown away. And then they don't have to use pins. And they have straighter lines. Their seams match mm-hmm. up perfectly. It's like the latest thing, but it's an old thing. So, I love that. And everyone gets a better result. Mm-hmm. When they leave, because the adults, when I teach them, we just do hand towels, or just dish towels to get good lines going.
To get going.
And boy, the glue just makes it look good. So, yeah, so my favorite.
Do the glue sticks work really well with zippers? Because you had mentioned to me you use them a lot with zippers.
Yes. They're great for zippers. I did a tutorial on my blog on making pillows with an invisible zipper and did not use a single pin. It's all mm-hmm. glue stick. And I think that's one of the most looked at and repinned on Pinterest tutorials mm-hmm. that I've done. People just love it.
Yeah. I have never tried it. I need to well, I haven't done a zipper in a little while, so that's another story.
Well, I have a tutorial.
Yes. I will have to go search that out.
It's fun.
We have maybe about a minute or so. You are lucky enough that you have some other sort of business type friends that live in your area. Do you guys get together?
We do. I've got a good group. I live very close to Heather Bailey. She's a good friend of mine, and we're both really busy, so we don't get to see each other as much as I'd like, mm-hmm. but she's there if I need her, and I'm here for her. And then Barry Ackerman and Christy Fincher, she's Sharon Chamber's daughter, and she owns Purple Daisies LLC. She's another glue gal. We get together a lot, and it's not just to talk about fabric, but that's what, you know, what our main love is. But we talk about the kids and family and marriage and then, you know, business and mm-hmm. fabric.
fabric. Yes. That's always fun to have local business people that you can meet, you know, because the trade shows get so busy that you just have a different kind of flow.
Yeah. It's nice to be with people who understand your language and your lingo and yeah.
So tell everybody again where to find you online so they can look you up.
Yeah, find me at makesewing.com, but join the Facebook group Make Sewing Studio, because that's where I'm going to be posting when I start. I've got my YouTube channel is getting started, so I've got a couple mm-hmm. things there, which is under Make Sewing Studio. But the Facebook is where I post everything as soon as it's ready. And I'll be having online classes and online all sorts of lessons and fun things. And, yeah, I'm just getting started with this new thing. So it's going to be fun.
And your videos are very good.
So, oh, thanks, Pat.
Yeah, I like them. They're you know, you do a great job. So thank you for being here. I had fun.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. We're going to take a break.
Talk to you later.
Yep.
From American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
Join the 1 Million Pillowcase Challenge in March for the Ultimate Pillowcase Competition. Gather a team and compete in one of two categories during the month of March to make pillowcases, earn points, and maybe be crowned the Ultimate Pillowcase Champion. The top three teams in each category will be awarded cash prizes. Even if you're not forming a team, you can watch all the action with weekly voting and daily prizes. Visit allpeoplequilt.com/pillowcase madness for more information.
Quilt along with us in 2017. Join our fourth annual quilt along by stitching a wall hanging, a throw, or a one-block table topper, or all three projects. Visit allpeoplequilt.com/quiltalong for a list of participating bloggers and designers and to see photos of what staff members and other readers are sewing. Share your photos on social media by using the hashtag APQQuiltalong to join the fun.
Follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's talk show. I am your host, Pat Sloan, and we're going to talk a little bit about folk art and primitive work. And I'm just really excited to talk to Rebecca Smith, because when I saw her folk art, I was like, oh yes, I need to see more of this. And she is an artist, and is now, we're lucky enough that she's working in wool so that all of us can enjoy her art. So Rebecca, your style is just speaks to me personally. Tell me a little bit about how you got interested in folk art.
Well, it all started with my parents. Growing up in rural Pennsylvania, they were antique dealers and collectors. Mm-hmm. So we spent a lot of our time, especially in the summers, going to a lot of antique shows, going to antique shops, a lot of museums, historic sites. So I was exposed, you know, from the time I can remember, to early American folk art and antiques, and just really grew to love the colors and the textures and the style that, you know, our American ancestors had.
You know, I think that that's what, you know, I have family, my family is from the Pennsylvania Dutch area. And so, you know, who knows? I mean, that might be why I love that so much. But it just reminds, you know, every time I see that style, I'm like, oh, I just think it's really neat. You started as a painter. Is that what you intended to do?
Oh, it was. Mm-hmm. I started 25 years ago with folk art painting. My mother got me started by, you know, we were newly married, we had just had our twins, and trying to figure out what we wanted in our home, and she offered me this really great cupboard, but she told me I had to paint it, and mm-hmm. then she gave me a photograph of a Rufus Porter style wall mural and said, you have to paint it like this. Mm. And I said, well, sure, I took the challenge, and from then on, it was nothing but paint, and I, you know, really developed my business and my style around painting and interiors and murals and stenciling and furniture. And I really thought that that's where I would be my entire career.
You know, I think that it's fun how things enter our life and then you make this huge shift. When did you, like, start working with textiles?
So I always liked textiles. My mother, you know, big, she mm-hmm. rug hooks, she does samples. So I would go with her to, you know, the wool shop, and I would watch her as she picked out wool, and I would look at it and touch it, and but it didn't really, you know, speak to me at the time till about 12 years ago. I decided that I really needed to find something else to offset all of the painting I was doing. It, when you work in a period style, I find mm-hmm. that it can be just a little bit limiting. So I was mm-hmm. feeling this pull that I needed to do something else creative-wise where I could kind of break out of the mold that I was in. Mm-hmm. And I found this picture of a wonderful child's bed cover that was done in a crazy quilt style, completely wool appliqué with all kinds of animals. And it said something to me, and I was really surprised. And I thought, well, I know I can't afford to buy it, but maybe I can make it. And I asked my mom for some wool, and she yeah. kind of looked at me funny because I didn't sew or anything. And, you know, I made these little patterns that I just kind of free form cut, and I made this little piece. And the whole time I'm making it, I'm thinking, well, this is really similar to how I paint, and I'm going to add some dots here and some lines mm-hmm. here. And by the time I was done with it, I had thought of like five more projects I wanted to make. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where it all started with the wool applique.
You know, the part that you told me that also just tickles me to no end is how you were basically selling finished goods. You know, you had a booth and
right.
And you were doing finished goods, and people would come up to you, people who made things, and they were recognizing that your work was something they would often see as, you know, something like that as a pattern. So they were always saying to you, Rebecca, you know, do you have a pattern for that? And you're like, what are they talking about? That's like,
oh, it's so true. I was really caught off guard by that part of the textile world because I, you know, I had not been in it at all. Mm-hmm. And when I started doing the wool applique and selling it and then started putting it like on the internet and Pinterest, and I would get emails from people saying, you know, I love this. I would like to make one too. Do you have a pattern?
Yeah.
And to myself, I'm thinking, well, no, because, you know, I would just freeform everything. I didn't really make a pattern very often unless it was a shape that I was struggling with. And so I had no record of what I did. I had no pattern. Besides, I had no idea how in the world you wrote a pattern, what all that involved. It just seemed very complicated. So I was always, you know, flattered, but it was, the answer was usually, well, no.
Right.
I don't.
So what kind of kicked over for you, you know, what kind of made you go, okay, well, let me explore that now?
Well, that would have be all the fault of my publisher.
Oh.
I was doing a show here in Ohio and selling my finished work. And I think it was the last day of the show. A lady walked in and looked around and then handed me her card. And she said, if you ever think of writing a book, give me a call. And that was the last thing I was expecting from anybody to say in a show. And I really started thinking about it. Why not? If I'm, you know, if I want to get into this pattern business, what better way than to work with a publisher who can teach me how to do this? Because I had no clue what to do to make a pattern so that it would be correct and people would find it, you know, appealing. So it really all started with my publisher, absolutely.
And that's C&T, right?
Correct, yes.
Yes, yeah, I was going to say, am I saying that right? C&T, yes. So you have books now?
I'm sorry?
Do you have two books now?
I do have two books now. We just released book number two in June of this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there. You know what I like is, Rebecca, your particular motifs that you're doing are coming. I think they're fresh because I've been following folk art since I've discovered it. Like. In fabric, only in the sort of in the fabric world, a little bit in the non-fabric. But, you know, I just love the approach that you have. Like, you have your pen, your quill pen in an inkwell as part of a project. It's like those are things that are just different and you make them interesting. Is this coming from your painting part?
I really think a lot of it does. A lot of it is motifs and a style that I developed from painting. And I will tell people that for me, wool applique is just painting with textiles. Mm-hmm. I use the same embellishments and a lot of similar colors. But what's nice about wool is it's a little more freeing and you can explore options in wool that may not translate as well into painting. So I have found it just to be, you know, this wonderful medium for me to really express what I see around me, especially when you get into like the things in nature and textures and that. It's really much easier to do it in wool than in painting, but it definitely stems from all the painting I've done for so many years.
So how are you thinking about your wool colors? Because you've come from this paint pot, you know, environment where you're mixing and doing, you know, whatnot. I'm not very good at painting, but I know that it's, you have a little bit of control over what color you're working with. When you go to wool, are you dyeing your own wool to get these colors? You know, how are you approaching it?
Yeah, absolutely. I dye all of my own wool now. I didn't when I started. But it was just a natural progression to really come to that because it is a lot, it's very similar to the paint pot. I mix most of my dyes from the primary colors. So you do have a little bit more control over the outcome, although you never have total control over the outcome because there's so many variables in dyeing wool that aren't in paint. Paint is very... It's true. It's kind of what you see is what you get. It dries very similar. Dyeing wool is completely different And but I like that because you'll you'll surprise yourself sometimes with something that you would never have thought to dye and never thought that you would use that color until you see it. And then sometimes it sparks an entire, you know, piece that you want to make just because you saw something come out of the dye pot. And to me, that's what's very, and I get, you know, really charged up when the dye day goes really, really well.
Yeah. Yeah. I've done a little bit of wool dyeing back many years ago. So it's like, it's a big mystery. And I really had, published formulas because I don't know how to mix color. So it was, but it was fun because you really just never knew. Now you also, besides your books, you also are doing single patterns and you're teaching. Are you teaching applique, stitches when you go out?
Yeah, my teaching schedule is very full, and it's all a wool applique. So what I do is I have projects that are specifically for workshops that you can't get anywhere else until I retire, you know, the pattern. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of I do everything from basic. I have never cut out a freezer paper pattern before. Mm-hmm. I don't even know what side of the freezer paper to use, all the way to advanced, you know, techniques for finishing or building something three-dimensional. And I can do them all in one class, too. I can have a beginner to an expert in one class. And I find that, you know, one of the best parts of my job is the teaching and the interacting with students because they're just so inspiring and they're so enthusiastic, which, you know, you can, when you work by yourself in your studio, you can start to feel like there's no one else out there.
No one else.
You're all alone.
Rebecca,
and you get out there. Yeah.
This has been so much fun. We're out of time. But thank you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much, Pat.
We'll be right back.
To finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting, visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To avoid mixing up various size strips once cut, you can write the measurements on the strip selvages. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for the price of one. That's a full year free. Every issue is packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, detailed photography, complete materials lists, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today at allpeoplequilt.com.
Take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's talk show. You can visit Rebecca. I missed getting in her website. But it's rebekahlsmith.com. So we are going to talk to Linda Pumphrey about her new book, Red and White Quilting. We're trying to get her on right now. And I want to tell you that the show is sponsored by Moda Fabrics. And if you have not gone out recently and taken a look at their blog, there was a really fun article about different ways to store your hexies for travel that I thought was brilliant, you know, different containers and some things like that. So I think we are just about ready here. We've got Linda Pumphrey on, and she is the author of a new book called Red and White Quilting. And Linda's been on many times before, and this is her second book. So, Linda, I am so excited about your book.
Oh, thank you, Pat. I'm excited to be on your show.
I love talking
with everyone that wants the book.
I know. I just love talking to you because you know so much stuff. I mean, just sound, you have so much knowledge. What made you decide to do a book on red and whites?
I love the graphic nature of a two-color quilt. And it really was a choice between blue and white and red and white. And the red and white just has a little more drama to it. Mm-hmm. And the designs pop just because the blues kind of seem to be really calming and the red has a little more excitement. So that's why we went red and white.
Yeah, that's my personal favorite. So,
well, and that too.
Yeah, okay, that was done just for me. So what was the premise of this book? Are you pulling from antiques? Are you adding in new things? Give me a little overview.
It's based on 40 blocks, and the 40 blocks were picked off of quilts at the International Quilt Study Center and Museum of the University of Nebraska. In Lincoln, Nebraska, mm-hmm. And the royalties go back to the museum for their mission.
Oh, and you're on the board at the museum too, right?
I'm actually a past member now. I have completed my board term with them.
Yeah,
but you still very active in promoting the center and mm-hmm. and helping them grow.
So you actually have some forewords by a couple of people that give some history of red and whites. And then you've taken the blocks and done some really interesting things. What is the layout? How did you approach those 40 blocks?
I picked different sizes. They're 12, 16, 20, and 40, and then 50, or 30, mm-hmm. and then 50. Sorry, I misspoke there. Mm-hmm. And then, so it gives all the instructions for all the blocks. And then I wanted to change some of the scale of a typical block. So if it typically was a 15-inch block, I changed it up and kind of exploded it to a 30-inch block. Mm-hmm. And the Carpenter Square is one of my favorite all-time quilts and quilt blocks. And the width of the bands in the Carpenter Square are normally around an inch, and I wanted mm-hmm. to make them skinnier. So the drama was even a little bit more enhanced. And so on the quilt, the block that's in the book, the little strip is a half inch.
Oh, my goodness. How big is this? The 82-inch square, you made a whole quilt with the Carpenter Square.
Yes. And those blocks are 30 inches and then put mm-hmm. on point.
Yeah. It is so cool. I mean, that is my favorite in the book. I'm like, how did you think of that? Because I don't even recognize the block anymore when you started changing all those things. Do you mess around with them on a design board or in a computer program?
I do the drawing on a computer program, mm-hmm. and then I do make a test block. And sometimes... it changes from the computer program to the reality in fabric.
You're like, that didn't work.
Yeah. And I have a secret on that block. When I did the original block and sent it in for photographs, I did 3 strips. But when I did the quilt, I did 4 strips. So we had a Photoshop at the very last minute, that 4 strip in on the block, but you can't tell.
No, you can't tell. I would never have known. This is the insider secret you get on my show.
That, correct.
That you'd never know about. So let's talk about some tips for red and white. Now, in the book, are you using mostly solids to showcase the quilts?
Yes, I used all red and white solids. Okay. And they'd be just as dramatic in if you wanted to use different colors or prints and that type of thing. Mm-hmm. But to really show the drama, we stayed with solids. And anytime when you're playing with a solid and white, you do have the potential, although use a high-quality solid, you have less potential, but a bleeding mm-hmm. or the color.
So but, how do you prepare those reds and the whites to be put into a quilt that you intend to wash?
I pre-wash all the fabric. Mm-hmm. In warm water with a mild detergent, and if the water turns color, then I wash it again until the water becomes clear. Luckily, this fabric I did not see any color come out, mm-hmm. and then I am careful when I'm ironing not to use steam.
Oh,
again,
okay.
Not giving that color a chance to run.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. That because that is actually putting moisture on it that can wick into the other pieces.
Yeah. And the other thing when you're doing, especially using white fabric, is to make sure you use a white batting behind it so that you're not using a cream color batting that will make it turn it a little yellow, more creamy.
Oh, that's a good tip. I hadn't really focused on that. Yeah, because there are a lot of battings that are not pure white. What's mm-hmm. a pure white batting that you would recommend?
Well, because I work for Mountain Mist on my mm-hmm. day job, I use the White Rose, which is a
yeah.
needle punch all cotton on every one of the projects in this book.
Yeah, it's a beautiful batting. So it's I love the Mountain Mist battings. What about the threads, Linda? Because, you know, you have, if you're piecing maybe a bunch of red blocks, would you use red thread?
If it was red to red, I would use red thread. But most mm-hmm. of the pieces were quilted with, or pieced with white thread.
Okay.
Because usually it was red to white. If mm-hmm. I'm appliquing a white strip on a red background, I use the white thread, both in the bobbin and the top. And vice versa. Unless I really wanted to accent that applique edge, then I would have changed. If I didn't want to mm-hmm. emphasize the applique edge, I would use red on a white applique piece. I mm-hmm. believe in this book, I emphasized all the edge, making sure they were nice and crisp.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, you know, it's interesting to think about because, you know, people might feel like, oh, you might see the white thread. But if you're doing it on the machine, that's really not going to be the case.
Yeah, no. And then for the quilting, the actual quilting, we did quilt with red thread on white backgrounds to emphasize when we wanted the centers to pop and mm-hmm. the design to pop.
So can you tell me about, because you have like little stories about a lot of the quilts in here. What is one of them? So you can just give an example.
Well, I had the best fun naming the quilts because they're mm-hmm. all original designs, so I got to name them. And the one that I loved naming was the Childhood Games. It's a mm-hmm. snowball block, very mm-hmm. traditional block, and then a checkerboard block. And those are just games that we would play as a child in my family. So mm-hmm. Some of the names have personal meanings behind them. And then mm-hmm. One of the names, I didn't know if the editors were going to let me keep that name, but it's called Drinking Party. It has the drunkard's path in it. And then inside the path is a starburst or sunburst pattern. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the myth behind drunkard's path, sometimes if a person sleeps underneath a quilt that's made of a drunkard's path, they might like to drink a little bit too much.
Mm-hmm.
So, and also if you drink too much and follow the path and fall down, you'll see stars.
Oh.
So called a drinking party. So there's a little story. I made up stories behind all the quilt names just for my enjoyment.
You know, well, you know, you have to have some fun, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You also have author tips all sprinkled through here. So, and they pertain to what's going on with that particular one. Like on the heart and handkerchief one, you have a tip about preventing shadowing because there's applique on this one. Can you share that one?
Yeah, on that one, we applicated white fabric to a solid red background. And if you don't line that white fabric, you'll get the background shadowing through. So I use a really lightweight non-woven interfacing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't want to add a lot of stiffness or bulk to it, but I wanted that white piece to be truly white. The other thing you can do is cut away, but you still have the little edge where you cut away, and I didn't want that to show.
Right. That's like the whole thing about the cutting away. It's like you're always going to have what's, you know, you'd have to get really tedious, wouldn't you, to sort of clip back in behind? Yeah, that would be crazy. So some of these, you have a ton of different options. Like, not only do you have the quilt, but then you have other layouts.
Yeah, for each pattern, I show two other options. So if you don't like the block that I chose, but you kind of like the layout, then mm-hmm. you can choose a block of your choosing, or I'll show you some alternatives, two other alternatives, and how that same layout with a different block really changes the effect of the quilt.
Yeah. So are these quilts going to be hanging anywhere?
Yes, they're all going out to the Road to California show in January. So hopefully mm-hmm. everyone that is attending that show will get to see them. And then they will travel with the original Sewing and Quilt Expo all of next year.
Oh, all of next year.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's really nice. Do you have some, like a little tip? You have one called Simply Touching Stars, which are sort of like red and white lone stars. And then you have these cool blocks that kind of come in there. But that's sort of an intimidating block to some people. What would be something that would help them?
Well, it's all strip piecing, and mm-hmm. There is an inset, the block, you do have to do inset seams, and I find practice on that helps, but also the just take your piecing really slow so you get that accurate seam. And then you don't get, sometimes when you're doing stars, especially the eight-pointed stars like that, you might get some tenting in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
You have a lot of bulk going to
right.
the middle, and I find if you kind of, if you press in a, so the background goes in a clockwise
mm-hmm.
circle, then it helps eliminate the block, the bulk.
Yeah, the bulk, yeah. So it's like spinning, like people call mm-hmm. it spinning the seams. So this was a big project, Linda. You have a lot of stuff packed in this book.
It was a lot of fun to do, though.
Yeah.
And as many designs as is in the book, mm-hmm. probably twice as many hit the floor and
right.
won't see the light of day.
Oh, isn't that the way? You have like this idea and that idea, but they can't all fit in there. It would be like a series of books. There you go.
Yeah. That's...
So tell me one, we have about 30 seconds. Tell me one thing that you're doing coming up.
I'll be going to Quilt Market, and then I am going to be traveling around to different guilds throughout the United States and doing book signings and presentations this year on the book. So hopefully I'm coming close to where somebody listening is at.
They'll have to be watching for you. And I'm going to tell everybody the museum's website. It is quiltstudy.org, the International Quilt Study Center Museum in Lincoln, Nebraska. So thank you, Linda, for being here. It's a gorgeous book.
Thank you so much.
We'll be right back.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts & More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Join American Patchwork and Quilting on Facebook for daily quilting inspiration, tips, giveaways, and more. Find us at facebook.com/APQ magazine. This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. Press and seal can be used to hold pieced units in place before sewing together.
See what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's talk show, and we are going to talk about some sort of new innovative things that my friend Sarah Lawson is doing. Sarah of So Sweetness has a fabulous new Facebook, I would call it a show, that she's doing. Hi, Sarah. How are you?
Hi, Pat. Thanks so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
You know, I just love that you are always experimenting. Your brain is like on like Zoom. You have got so I know. It's like I can't keep up. You know, you have so many fun ideas. You've been doing videos for a while, so doing videos is not new for you. But what was going on in your mind when you started playing with Facebook Live, which is basically, you know, it's a live show.
Yeah, so basically I don't share family photos anywhere online. So what I'm sharing on my social media in the past has been either photographs of my work or customer appreciation photos. And so mm-hmm. I felt I was getting really unhappy with that particular system because I felt like my followers, there was no way for them to really know me. I wasn't mm-hmm. posting a lot of photographs of myself. And so Facebook Live is an opportunity for them to feel like they're in the room talking to them. And so, yeah, it's been a really great, I guess I'll call it an experiment.
Yeah. Well, you know, what I love is that you're taking it sort of to a little bit different level, because it's not, I mean, I get my phone and I jump on mine and, you know, chat with people. And sometimes I do it in a little bit more complicated level, but you're sort of developing really what I would call a weekly show, which is interactive. But you also have things that pop in and out. It's an hour long. What do you do for the hour?
So the show is on Sundays. It's called Social Sunday, and it's at 5 p.m. Central Time. And I talk about certain bullet points every week. So I have 7 points that I hit. So I talk about my favorite Notion of the week. I show a fabric that I just added to my stash that week, a book review now, and I also show most weeks a sewing tutorial video. So that's pre-recorded content that we put in, and the sewing tutorial is usually about 10 to 20 minutes, depending on the technique. And I show mm-hmm. how I sew a specific technique. So, for example, making a zipper pocket. I mm-hmm. do the whole process from start to finish, putting the zipper in the pocket, and the tutorials are really close-up shots, really tight shots on my hands and what I'm doing, or if I'm at the sewing machine, what exactly I'm sewing, because I don't want people to see me standing behind a machine and they just kind of, you know, hear me talking. I want them to mm-hmm. see exactly what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm. So you have to buy a piece of fabric every week?
Well, just my nature, I just have very little self-control, so it just happens that way.
I think I'm going to try using that one. I had to buy this for the show. It's like I have to buy it for the show. This past Sunday, which I have to, is October 8th, 2017, is you did one where you're featuring some books that I sent you to feature, which I thank you so much for sharing my teaching series books.
Yeah, it was great. And the format that we have for the show, my husband helps me with the video and the lighting, but we show, it's kind of like a news show where you have pictures in the corner of the screen. And so when mm-hmm. I did when I talked about the book review for your 3 books that you sent me, we were able to show pictures from the book of some of the projects, so the finished quilts in the book, and I feel like it adds a lot of visual interest when they, you know, the followers can see the projects and not just hear me talk about them, but mm-hmm. I showed pages from the book and how I appreciated the step-up photos and how I thought they were helpful, so all of that, I feel, makes an interesting show to watch.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for sharing the insides of it, because, you know, it is it's nice to have somebody else who sees my books see something in it that speaks to them, you know, so I appreciate that. When you're doing your pattern, Sarah, and this is one of the things you mentioned, you do a lot of photo step outs in your actual individual patterns.
Yeah, so my patterns all are, they're not illustrations, they're actual photographs of each, mm-hmm. basically every single step, because I know a lot of people out there are visual learners. So as in your books, they had a ton of step-by-step photos. I feel like that's mm-hmm. what people need and that's what they want to see.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about some of the new things you have going on besides this, which people can, you have to go to Facebook to the Sew Sweetness page, which is where these runs. You can click the video tab, but you have some other new things coming up.
Yeah, this week we're starting two additional Facebook Lives, so on Tuesday and Thursday, and they're completely different content than on Sunday. So on Tuesday we're posting, we're calling it Ask Sarah, so I'm responding to a particular question that I've gotten from a reader on social media, somewhere on social media, mm-hmm. and what they've asked for, I've shot a sewing tutorial video to answer their questions. So this week will be on how to use a rivet press. Mm-hmm. And then I also answer questions live. So when people come in, they can post a question in the comments on Facebook, which is really easy to do. And I'm sure a lot of people already know how to do that. And mm-hmm. then I answer their questions live. And then the Thursday show is going to be called Stitched In with Sarah. And the concept behind that is I'm working on a UFO, an unfinished sewing project, and I'm encouraging my followers to work on their own sewing projects while they're watching the show. And I have interesting things going on, like interviews. I'm showing customer photos and likely more sewing tutorial videos during that show as well. So I'm trying to keep a different variety between the three shows, but I just found that the Sunday show, I had so many more things that I wanted to talk about, so that's why we added the two additional shows every week.
Yeah. So you're going to be like a one-person television network. You're going to be out there.
That would be nice.
Yeah, there you go. And you're just going to be constantly on air. So what is one of the tips that most people, like, do people go like, oh, my gosh, I never thought about that?
So I would say in the past year, I started using this product called Dritz Wash Away Wonder Tape, and it's basically a double-sided tape, and it's only a quarter of an inch wide. So I found that it was fantastic for installing zippers because making a zipper pocket, using pins to pin the zipper in place makes the finished product look wavy because the pins, you know, make the ripples mm-hmm. in the fabric appear. And I started using the Wash Away Wonder Tape, and, you know, as per the name, it's water soluble, but basically you stick it down to the long edge of the zipper tape, remove the paper backing to reveal the second side of the adhesive, and then that just sticks to your fabric. And it's fantastic. It makes the zipper perfectly flat. It's really easy to do. And I came across this method because I teach often to quilt guilds, and many times they're quilters, obviously, and not bag makers. And so many of them had no experience, or maybe perhaps they started their sewing history making garments and hadn't installed a zipper in maybe 20 or 30 years. And so making it easier for them to put the zipper in, they were all really impressed with the technique of using the Dritz Wash Away Wonder Tape. So I try to incorporate that every time that I teach because, yeah, they're very easily impressed by that method, and it makes me feel good that they've learned something new. So
yeah, it is fun to find a product that maybe you have even, and that you're just sort of like, I, you know, a new way. You're kind of always finding new ways to use mm-hmm. things. And being that you make bags, you have maybe a different set of products than a regular quilt maker might normally have on hand. Mm-hmm. So you also, Sarah, have been doing some in-person retreats. You know, where you're hosting a retreat, so people come to you for an in-person, what is it, 2 days?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a weekend.
A weekend. Yeah. So are you having fun with that?
Yeah, it's been great. We held our first two retreats this year in June and September. And when I say we, it's a family affair. So my husband helps mm-hmm. me, my kids help with the loading and unloading. And mm-hmm. It's a lot of fun. So I finished up the second retreat for the year a couple weeks ago. It was the last weekend in September, and it's Thursday evening through Sunday afternoon. And we have it in Chicago, but almost all of the attendees come from other states. So we had ladies coming in from Canada, Seattle, Florida, so all over the country. And many of them are coming traveling by themselves, so they don't know anybody else at the retreat. But I am really excited that everyone comes and meets new friends. There was, at the last retreat, two ladies in particular. I know they didn't know each other before the retreat, but if mm-hmm. you saw them at the end, you would think they'd been best friends for years. So that's the best part about it, really.
Yeah, and it's nice that you can do it at, you know, it's probably a bit more work than if you're traveling to somebody else's area, but mm-hmm. you also can, you know, sort of do it when it suits your schedule, planning in advance, of course, locally.
Right.
So,
right,
yeah.
Right.
Now, you also have little bags that are coming up. I saw some sneak peeks. What is that about?
So I'm calling them minikins, and they're 12 patterns with videos to go along with them, videos how to make the entire project. And they're all small accessories, and they're all really quick. So 15 steps or less. Most of them take a fat quarter for the exterior of the project and the lining, and minimal supplies. So just a little bit of interfacing, maybe a zipper. And I wanted something that would be really quick to make, because it's always so pleasant to sit down in the evening and finish a project before you go to bed or something like that. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'm really excited about them. They come out, the patterns come out on October 23rd.
Yeah. Fun. So do you, I know that when you have gone out and about and teaching, you know, occasionally, like all of us, you know, quirky things happen. Do you ever share any of those?
Actually, I was teaching this past August in Ohio, and my family came with. It was sort of a teaching trip / vacation, and I don't like to pack a lot when I go on a trip, just what I need, like one outfit for each day, just the one pair of shoes, so minimal packing. And I had brought a dress for, I had a lecture at a quilt shop, and 10 minutes before I was supposed to leave the hotel, I was just giving the dress a quick iron. And, it, you know, being a hotel iron, I was not used to the settings, and I just turned it on and started ironing right away. Mm-hmm. And I lifted up the iron, and the bottom of the iron was green, and my dress was green. And I, at first, it didn't register what had happened, but I had ironed an iron-shaped hole in the back of the dress where my, you know, behind would be.
Oh, my goodness.
So, I absolutely could not wear the dress to the lecture, and I had nothing else with me that was, you know, I had t-shirts and,
yeah,
just, you know, casual clothing, so I had to go in that. But, yeah, it was really, my face was all red. My husband, you know, jumped up and ironed one of my t-shirts really quick for me. But, at the time, it was a disaster.
Right. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, it's like one of those things you just don't hope they don't happen again. But
right.
Now you can... You can save that iron.
Yeah,
shape.
maybe I'll bring my own iron next time. Who knows?
Yeah. Oh, well, Sarah, this has been a lot of fun catching up, and I just love your new series of Facebook shows.
Thank you, Pat.
Everybody can visit Sarah at SoSweetness.com. They can sign up for a newsletter, find the links to her Facebook, and when you're out of Facebook, visit allpeoplequilt.com. Oh, not at Facebook. There you look for American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine, or online, allpeoplequilt.com. And for me, Quilt Along with Pat Sloan, and also my website is, find everything, go to patsloan.com. And we will catch up with you again next week.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques. Thanks for listening.